Hey, everybody. You've reached the Mayfair Podcast. I'm Eric.
And this is Josh. It is Saturday, March 16th, 2024.
Wow. Almost St. Patrick's Day, but not. Although it will have been by the time you hear this. So
yes.
It's too late.
I don't want to alarm you, Eric, but there's someone else in the room.
It's true. I brought a special guest, a special birthday boy guest.
Birthday.
My good friend, Brad.
Hi.
Hey, Brad's here.
Yeah.
Hello, I am Brad. It is my birthday.
Yeah, you see, my former boss from HMV and turned friend, I guess. I don't know how that worked. And neither of us work for HMV anymore, and I guess nobody does.
Wait, does anyone work for HMV anymore?
I'm not here anymore. I mean, it's still around in the UK.
I left
and came back or something? I don't know.
I think there's some kind of online presence, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, they're not expecting us to go into work, are they? Because it's been a while.
I really hope not.
Oh, wait, I just heard... Is it HMV that they're opening up inside of Toys R Us's?
Yes, right.
I think, what is that?
How did he know that and we didn't know that?
I just remember that with HMV floating in my brain right now.
It was the Zellers principle.
That's so weird.
Zellers opening in Hudson's Bay.
Are they only going to sell toy-related albums?
I mean, they kind of were by the end of it, though. It was so much like ephemera and like books and
belt buckles,
plushies and what? Yeah, all that Christmas ornaments. But like it was doing well for them. That was kind of that was near the end of the tenure.
I could possibly see like this is like a distraction for the adults.
Yeah.
And also could be a good way to get your children into vinyl.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to have every Taylor Swift album in there, I'm assuming. Yeah. So,
like, that's true. Whenever there's like a special edition of that.
Barbie, all that. I was like, I don't know what else kids like. We were just at Vertigo down the street. So we're all vinyled up at the moment.
The last thing I bought at Vertigo was Star Wars, A New Hope and American Graffiti on Laserdisc.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Somebody brought in 3 or 4 boxes of Laserdisc. I got them for really cheap, and I don't know what they're selling them for, but it's one of those weird things because they're really cool to have, but most people can't do anything with them. And I lucked out. Blessing in the curse is I was like, I need a Laserdisc player. And one of the other Mayfair guys was like, I think my mom might have one in her basement or something. So I now have a Laserdisc player. And if you think old...
You've tried it, though?
I have not, but he thinks it works, and if not, I've been told how to fix it.
He thinks it works.
I don't know. I got to try it, yeah. It's still here because I've been biking the last little while because the weather's so nice, and I didn't want to, like, bike with it.
Oh, man, we could have had the Laserdisc player, like, as a guest on the podcast this whole time. I never knew that.
But it's weird that Laserdiscs are being sold at record stores. It's just another weird old... I don't think Laserdisc is making a comeback, but...
Well, I think it was 10 years... My second stint at HMV, if I'm not mistaken, somebody said they were in like a HMV or a record store in New York, I believe, and there was like a Laserdisc wall.
With like newer stuff?
Yeah,
wow.
Like they were selling Laserdiscs, and I believe this was within the last probably 10 years as someone told me this story, like whether it's true or not.
Yeah.
This is a single source, but I don't know.
I already feel... 100 years old, because when I worked at Rogers Video, and it's a neat job to have because it's almost like working at a typewriter factory. Like when I'm an old man, I can be like, in my day, there was video stores. And other things are still out there. You know, there's still restaurants, there's still theme parks, there's still bookstores.
There's still one video store in Ottawa.
Yeah. But it was the tail end of VHS because I was there right around 2000 or so. Phantom Menace was on VHS. But then I do not believe Attack of the Clones was VHS.
Oh, yeah, we were working together when Attack of the Clones came out on DVD in 2002.
Yep.
I remember
was it VHS?
Because we had,
I don't think
it
so.
Was, no, but we had, God, 500 copies of that thing at least.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was just so many copies. I think it was below cost for the first day or week or whatever it was. And so it was like, I don't remember. We would get, you know, the discount, but for stuff like that, there was no discount because it was already below the discount.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was like, it was at least like, I don't want to say $22. I don't know. I can't remember what things cost anymore.
No, I don't really remember. But yeah, I remember that. But I remember like the Lord of the Rings. Like the extended versions,
yeah.
I believe they were like triple VHS, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh my God.
At least double, if not triple.
Like 6 tapes for 3 movies?
I guess so.
Yeah.
That's possibly so big. 9.
Yeah.
So big.
With the bonus features, I believe it would have been 9. I believe there were 3 VHS tapes.
And it was probably like
per movie.
$200 or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I remember box sets being so expensive in the early days.
Yeah.
And you would see collectors who would have all the Buffys or all the X-Files. And nowadays, it's so funny, because nowadays, I remember it was like some Boxing Day sale, but it was like the tail end. And I bought all 3 seasons of Wonder Woman for nothing.
Like nobody expected you to say that.
It was like 3 for $30. And when you think of the content, it's a whole bunch of discs. It's hours of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And in its heyday, they were probably $60 a piece or something.
Oh, easily.
And nowadays, it's so funny because it is retro, right? Because Lee here at the Mayfair is more of a Star Wars fan than even I am. So he got the super duper Mando box set. Not even a, you know, it's tiny. Blu-rays fit on a couple discs, but so we are circling back to that a little bit with the nerds liking the physical media.
Yeah. It was always fun, but it was, God, the chaos of back then, and to think about that, you know, in comparison, or even like bookstores. You talked about that before with like midnight releases of Harry Potter's or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's no hype like that anymore in the same way, at least.
My favorite was just, I wish I knew the numbers, but like at Roger's Video, it was kind of a smaller one across the street from Barrymore's.
Yep.
Before it moved under Barrymore's. So I was there in that era. Now it's a corner store and a post office.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even guess how many movies were in there. But I always think back to, I worked a couple Christmases. And on Christmas Eve or the 24th Eve, whatever was the last day of work, it was bonkers. Pure insanity. The store was empty. And you'd have people coming in on the 24th at 10:38 when we're closing at 11 and being like, do you have It's a Wonderful Life? And you're like, no, we don't have It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have The Grinch? You're like,
We have Police Academy 5 and Swamp Thing 2. That's all we have. But the amount of money, and that wasn't even like a big warehouse, Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
It was empty. Every Friday or Saturday night was empty. And I think about that with HMV, where there was people who would come in once a week and buy half a dozen CDs every week, all the time. And that's gone, kind of, that collector kind of thing.
It is. It is. That's interesting, because I remember there was the one that we worked at was at Bank and Sparks.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of government people. And so lunchtime, you would see a lot of the same people every Monday to Friday. They would be in the store looking through CDs and
especially
movies and
Tuesday,
whatnot.
Or I think it was new release day was Tuesday. Or
yeah, it's rather interesting. And some people would maybe 3-4 times a week, they may leave with something in their hand. It was rather incredible.
I always remember I was in like junior high. A friend of a friend, we were over one day to play video games or whatever. His dad had a Star Trek original series VHS collection. And I remember it distinctly. These nice gray kind of clamshell cases, and each tape had only 2 episodes on it.
What?
So even Star Trek, God, what was it, 3 seasons? So
yeah.
There's like 90 episodes, 85 episodes. So this guy had 160 VHS tapes.
What?
Just like a library in his suburban dad basement.
Oh my God.
And I just look at that now and think about how now that's just all on whatever, Crave or Netflix or whatever.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that? Because I'm a collector too, and I feel it, but no Trekkie would want to throw out all of that stuff.
No.
And now I find it too, because I'm a big comic reader, and if you would have told 10-year-old me I'd be reading as many digital books as I am now, and it's the library's fault, and it's DC and Marvel both have their monthly subscriptions, and they're so good at curating it and making little subsets and making, you know, it's Halloween time, it's Valentine's, or this old timer passed away. They're so good at making all these things. And I feel bad for the brick and mortar stores. I'm very curious. I don't think comic books will go extinct the same way that music didn't go extinct. But in 10 years, in 20 years, are the monthly comic book going to go away? Nobody ever thought record stores were going to go away at one point. And now it's a small, loyal band keeping that going. So
yeah, it's interesting. Well, and even just to see vinyl, I mean, it never completely died, but obviously like slowed down. But now to see like the age of some of the people getting into vinyl now, like it really is something, can be like a 6-year-old to a 90-year-old, whatever. Like it's kind of funny just to see that never really disappeared and won't in a way. Like it's shifted more to online for a lot of stuff, but still like people love vinyl. Like everyone seemingly loves vinyl now. And I don't know if that will wane. Like people keep kind of, it's going to slow down, but it never really did.
No, it hasn't. I don't believe vinyl sales. I think there's only been like 1 year in the last 15 years where they've decreased in sales year over year.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So vinyls, I don't think is going to go anywhere. The only thing that I can see killing vinyl is just the pricing of it.
Oh, for sure.
I was gonna say it's getting to the point where it's like, it's kind of hard to afford to buy new records at this point in time. But even that.
There was a really nice Ninja Turtles movie vinyl. The original creators drew the cover. It was, of course, on like a green album.
An Eastman and Laird cover?
Eastman
and
Laird cover.
I've heard of things.
but it was something like, it was Shout Factory, I think.
Okay. And
it was
so $70.
But then the shipping is crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember clicking through and going, oh, maybe I'll get it. And then it was like shipping $75. And I'm like, so this album is going to cost me $125. Yeah. Or not to lean towards streaming, but I don't listen to a ton of music, but my wife does. And she has Spotify. And I'm like, or it's on Spotify. So I'm like, eh.
Yeah, that's why I've switched to getting a lot of like 45s, you know, because they're like, they're cheap and the shipping's pretty cheap and stuff. And so it's like Brad and I were just talking about that on the walk over here. We're like, we're not really buying a lot of records anymore because it's pretty standard is like almost $50 for a single record or like no less than 35.
Yeah.
And it's just, like I was saying to him, not like that's just one place doing that. It's just the nature of the beast. Costs go up, you know, and there's a lot of supply and demand involved too. But it's just, it's tough because it's not. And I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I kind of fell into comic books and I'm like, some of those are expensive, obviously, too. But, you know, they're smaller, they're lighter, they're not going anywhere. And I can still kind of afford them for now. But to your point, I almost think that's what's going to happen. Like, comic books physically, they're not going to disappear ever, but they will get expensive. And it's going to be niche-y type stuff.
Well,
yeah.
It's like that Danger Mouse Gemini, the re-release of the first album and then that lost album that got released. They've only released it through the record company on like some special blue vinyl, but it's from England, so I want to get both those records. But with the exchange rate and the shipping, it would have been, I think they would have cost me about $60-$70 a piece.
Yeah.
And I would love to own those records, but not at that price.
No. And there was no other option. Like, there wasn't just a black vinyl or Amazon or anything like that.
I remember I texted you recently about this, and I would just randomly, I think in December, I went online, or maybe it was last or in January, just to see like what the status of that release was, if it got like a wide release or not. They hadn't released the Lost album yet. It was like, I think it was like 6 weeks overdue of being released at that point in time. Man. And so it's like, if I had ordered it and I decide to, I'll drop $130, I wouldn't have the records right now anyway.
No.
Like, and that would have been like 4 or 5 months ago. Like,
yeah.
And I still would be waiting for them, you know? And it's like, it's not like big deal. Like, they probably will come or I'll get my money back, but still it's like,
yeah, that's kind of the thing. You always have something to listen to. But at the same time, you're like, when you were getting the Third Man Vault stuff, and you're like, you're paying ahead of time 100 and whatever. And you're like, when's it going to get here? Did it get stolen? Is it even here yet? You know, like.
Yeah. Actually, the last vault, did you see it?
No.
It was, I was so tempted. It was 5 Elvis singles. There were singles. So there was like, I think 10 songs plus like a disc of another 3 songs and something else. It was like $90.
Dang.
But it was going to be like, the quality was going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
And the thing is, part of me was just like, you know what? Just buy it.
Yeah.
Just don't open it.
Yeah.
In 2 years, put it online.
Pretty much.
And double, triple your money. Elvis people will buy anything.
Well, yeah. Except you. You obviously didn't. But they always do. Like, I do love that someone like a Jack White, who has that power and the money and is able to release, he's saved some very cool stuff like that. Oh, he had that blues box set.
Two
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, and those were like $300. Or so it's like, obviously, I'll never hear them. But I'm like, it's cool when you have a creator, regardless of the medium. It was like, you know what? I like this. I'm going to make it so that people can get this, you know?
Those were beautiful. They were like those wooden cases. Mm-hmm. And I believe it came with a bunch of vinyl and like plus like, I believe, zip drives or whatever. Like, I don't know. I forget how many hundreds of hours of music you would have got for that.
Yeah, maybe too much music. Yeah. But still, it's neat. But you get to a point where you're just like, oh yeah, I can't afford these things.
Yeah.
So I will champion them.
But I love all the Jack White type stuff. Who's the animation company that you bought the Freddy the Frog?
Or? Oh yeah, Thunderbean.
They're just doing the geek lord's work of just finding this stuff that if they didn't save these frog cartoons, nobody would have.
Yeah, because like there's always an audience. It's just how big is that audience? And I suppose that's what it comes down to for literally everything we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
But still, it is cool, especially like we just did cartoons here. It's always like the best vibe and you can't. I'm very biased, so it's hard, you know, for me to speak unbiased about it. To be able to like share an experience like that of this kind of lost art in some ways is just so incredible.
Oh, and we'll talk about when we talk about this week's movies, we have something right along that lines.
Ooh.
So yeah, it is, and to see it on the big screen, and we joke, Gwen and I joke that we'll show some old B movie here, and it has no right to look that good. Like it didn't look that good when it first came out, but they just do these restorations. And yes, it's not Citizen Kane. They didn't save Casablanca, but it's just so great that it's saved because there's a book out, and I forget the stat, but there's a shocking high percentage of movies from the VHS era. And yes, most of them are VHS fun garbage, but they're gone. Yeah. And it's all these straight-to-video pulp, you know, Die Hard knockoffs, Friday 13th knockoffs. And a lot of them are like, you might find it on VHS, but they're just destroyed because they've been watched 1,000,000,000 times. And the company's gone, the distributor's folded, and there's all these movies. And you might be like, oh, remember seeing that weird Sleepaway Camp knockoff? And they're gone.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to think of the lost media in that sense. And I'm sure that's the same with comic books, music, TV shows, everything like that.
Well, it's like 70s cartoons are for the most part gone.
Yeah. Unless you're Scooby-Doo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like a Hanna-Barbera of any kind, because we saw so many knockoff Scooby-Doos today. So it's like,
well, it's like, I remember watching that movie Hugo, and they had that scene where they just showed them melting all the old films to make high heels for shoes.
Oh,
and
God.
I remember being in the theater, and I just remember my just kind of the blood just draining from me, like just watching that thing. Are you kidding me? This is the history of cinema.
Yeah.
Was melted for
it's
for
so
plastic.
Interesting that now, like,
it's so bizarre.
Like now we have awesome, like, nerd museums or animation cells go to legit art galleries and stuff. But as little ago as the 30s or the 60s, Doctor Who, I love these stories.
I was going to say, like,
they're
horrible. I always think of Doctor Who.
But where somebody would be like, they had no sense that people in 10, 20 years would want to watch it. And they had a physical tape that was kind of expensive. And they'd be like, no, let's tape over that with the football match. And they did that. And there's these Doctor Who's now. And it's kind of fun where they... Sometimes they'll find the soundtrack and then they'll animate it. So they'll, that's the closest they can get where they've animated. Kind of looks like a Archer episode. But that's all they have is half decent sound recordings because they saved the original sound tape.
Wow.
Can you imagine that nowadays? You know, an episode, I'm trying to think, an episode of Star Trek Picard and somebody going, we'll tape over that with the hockey match, you know, Schitt's Creek and be like, no, we'll tape over that. Nobody wants to watch that in 10 years.
Well, it's like a Lost Horizon. They found a bunch of the sound for it. So if you're watching the movie, there's probably a good like 10 or so minutes of the movie of just still footage with them playing the sound that they found because they couldn't find the picture, but they found the sound. That does happen.
That's so sad. And well, then you find it like years later, some of this stuff does turn up, but it's just so you kind of assume at this point. Certain things, like London After Midnight or whatever, you know, like, well, there's just, like, stuff that, you know, you're probably not going to find. It's better not to think about it, I suppose, but it is nice when they, or, like, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, like, all the lost footage, you know, where it does turn up later. Yeah. And that's just, that's so cool. And it doesn't even matter if it's, like, good or bad. It's just to be able to see it at all. This stuff that's been in a salt mine for 50 years or whatever it is, you know.
Am I making this up? Did Peter Jackson find the spider footage from King Kong? Or was he looking for it?
He was looking for it. I mean, everyone's looking for it. But, like, he recreated it.
Like,
I don't think they ever... They did find an old-timey print of King Kong, but it didn't have it on it. You know?
Blurred in my head. I can't remember if he found it or not.
No, like, there was implications that maybe it was found, but it's, up to this point, still lost forever, unfortunately.
Boo.
Yeah, but it's... I don't know. It's nice enough that we do get like a crazy Blu-ray of that. Brad's a huge King Kong fan. Oh, I mean, I don't know who
his favorite movies.
Yeah, it's just so cool to see. I remember when I got the Blu-ray that at Turning Point, actually. It's so eerie and like spooky and just, oh my, like you can't, there's no really way to describe something like that having not seen it.
And imagine being 8 years old and watching that back then.
Yeah.
Must have destroyed your little brain. Just like, so I just listened to the audiobook. And I had assumed the novelization, and I assumed it was one of these like, oh, we did it in 2005, but it wasn't. It was much like Star Wars, which I know they released the novelization like a month before as publicity.
The Adventures of Luke Starkiller.
So people assume that Star Wars is based on a book, but it's not, kind of tricked. So King Kong, they released like a month before as publicity, but it's so neat that I didn't realize novelizations were a thing that long ago. But I just, same thing, I imagine being 12 back then and reading it. And then when King Kong showed up on screen, now we have all this behind the scenes. We're kind of savvy to it, you know, but it just must have wrecked kids' brains.
Well, I discovered King Kong through the old Saturday Night at the Movies of LWO. So, because we used to watch them quite regularly when I was a kid. I was a kid through the 70s, so there wasn't a lot to watch. So I look forward to 8 o'clock on Saturday nights. That movie I remember. And the other one I can really remember is, there's two actually, And Then There Were None. I remember watching that, and I saw it like at a place we went to that was up north, and there was like one TV, and people didn't really like us watching it, and we watched it, and they were bothering us while we were watching it, yada, yada, yada. But it just shook me, because these people, just getting them killed off one by one, being like probably like 7, 8 years old, it just blew my mind. Like, I didn't know really what I was watching, but I knew that I liked it.
Yeah.
And The Petrified Forest, that was the other one. Just Bette Davis in that movie is just so spectacular. I mean, Humphrey Bogart, obviously, sure. That's the movie that kind of that made him a star. But Bette Davis in that movie, I think, is just magnetic. She is so incredible. It's such an incredible film. And it all takes place, basically, almost all of it in just that one bar.
Yeah.
That, like, it's like 12 Angry Men that takes place in the one room. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how you can have an entire movie that's like a good 60, 70 minutes of a movie that's in one room.
For sure. And
then still keep it compelling.
It's lost, that kind of art, you know, and it really is like, I don't know. I don't want to typecast and be like, kids today wouldn't appreciate something like that. But it's like, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even take that risk these days, you know? So yeah, it is pretty incredible. But I mean, it just shows the power of good actors.
Exactly. A good script, a good director. Absolutely. If it all falls together, then yeah, you have something special.
And if it falls apart, it's still fun. Different way in that one.
Different reasons.
Okay, let us mention the movies that we are screening the week of Friday, March 22nd. A whole bunch of cool stuff this week. Our Ottawa premiere this week is called They Shot the Piano Player.
Ooh.
It's a documentary animation mix, which I always think is funny because I think there's old school documentary people who are like, that's not a documentary. But this is about a jazz pianist who disappeared in 1976. And in 2010, a music journalist is trying to figure out what happened to him.
Okay, and it's real.
True story, okay. Yeah. Told through animation and documentary footage, I think, with animation over it.
Yeah, it looks fascinating.
And
like, I saw the trailer.
It's narrated by Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, okay.
There you like go. Searching for Sugar Man minus the animation.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Another classic movie.
And then, as I mentioned before, we were talking about lost footage. This is really cool. The International Film Festival of Ottawa is dropping by, and they are screening. They did this once before. It's called Cinema's First Nasty Women, and it is early cinema shorts of action and slapstick and romance, and it's so cool. It's so cool to see, you know, things are still horrible for women, but back then, to see these women doing stunts and being the star of these shorts. And we're going to have live musical accompaniment with a guy on our piano.
A guy?
And they're coming in to tune up our piano. So our piano's going to sound
all
cool.
Right. Well, I guess that's okay.
Yeah. So that's super fun. So it's all this, a whole bunch of old short women starring early silent films.
Dang.
Oh, nice.
You sold me on that
one. So cool. And then on the same night, the film festival is also presenting the restoration of a movie called Archangel.
Oh.
And director Guy Madden is in attendance.
Brad's already.
So there you go. So big shot Canadian filmmaker Guy Madden will be dropping by.
That's awesome.
To introduce his film.
And also do a Q&A or no?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Not that I don't want to put pressure on him or anything. But like...
And he was here before for a film. And not to stereotype him, but for a guy who makes weirdo movies, a lovely guy.
I mean, you could say that about, like, I don't know, David Lynch or whoever too. Like,
yeah.
You're like, oh, well, that's fun.
Then on that note of talking about masterpieces.
Weirdo
We have our third month of Big Shark.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Weirdo.
You've got to come see it.
Brad was just talking about it on the way in. He was like, you know, we want Big Shark. What do you say? Not small guppy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we want Big Shark. That is nothing less. Yeah. And unfortunately, on the 23rd, I am staying at my parents' place overnight because my brother's in town.
What?
So I have to catch this in April.
Your brother can come?
Well, I mean, we're staying overnight in Carlson Place, so it'll be awkward. But, you know, apart from that, it's literally the one night that I'm not going to be here. So thanks for that. But
Big Shark is, it's staggering of how, you know, Tommy Wiseau is a real person. I have met Tommy Wiseau. Unless it's the greatest Andy Kaufman trick of all time, he's a real guy making these movies. And you're watching Big Shark, and there's just a few, like there's one scene.
You've watched the whole film?
I watched the whole film.
Okay.
I watched the Canadian premiere. I wanted to get that under my belt.
Yeah.
Two of our heroes walking down the beach to go confront the shark. The scene goes on for so long. And I say, not to insult my mom, but my mom, who is not a filmmaker, who didn't go to film school, would look at that scene and go, let's cut the walking a little bit. But it just goes. And it's just this fascinating train wreck. It's about firefighters. And then a flood happens in New Orleans. And there's a big shark. But you're not quite sure why the firefighters are fighting the shark.
Well, I was going to say, why are they involved in not a fire? Like
the
water
doesn't quite follow rules of reality because it's like going down streets and stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering that, like, because in theory, the flood is what allows the shark to go through the city, right?
Yeah, like, and so he's kind of like body surfing on the water.
Because I was like, he's a big shark. It would have to be big water.
And it is a big shark.
Okay, so the shark is big,
like,
but the water
Tommy's
is not.
That was Tommy's whole thing. Like, he was like, oh, Jaws, it's a normal shark. Our movie's better because it's like four stories high.
But it's also like, I mean, we had also heard, I mean, he was talking about this movie for like a year, and then the rumor was that he actually shot it in a week or two way later, and was just like, oh, you know, geez, I gotta make the movie, you know? So, because we keep asking like Greg about it, and
yeah,
he doesn't know anything about it. It's like the guy from The Room, we've had him a couple of times here and interviewed him and stuff, because like he was quote unquote supposed to be in the movie according to Tommy anyways. So he's in the teaser trailer, but he's not in the actual movie. So when I showed Emily the trailer, and then I showed her the real trailer after the fact, she's like, where's that other guy? Like, what happened? I was like, no, he's not actually in the movie. He thinks he's in the movie, but, you know, he's not really in the movie, you know? So I haven't seen whatever that movie is yet, but April, let me tell you, I'm very excited.
But Lee says that Tommy is threatening that he's going to be more prolific now because this is his first movie in 20 years. He's done some other things like acting and stuff, but he wants to make more. And it's a good business model because he has lived off of The Room for 20 years. But I love Big Shark because there was a woman sitting nearby me, and not in an insulting way, not even trying to like MST3K riff it. At one point, she just said, kind of under her breath, I don't think she realized she was so loud, just went like, what is happening? And so she was genuinely taken aback. So it's such a, if you like these kind of movies, you got to see this movie on the big screen. This movie will not be the same at home.
No.
And I genuinely don't know how long we'll screen it for. We would love it to be a new tradition, but this is the third month and we'll probably play it at least for six.
Yeah.
But it's the harsh reality, right? If month five and six, 15 people show up, we're like, you know, so we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. He was also in Samurai Cop 2. It's like a 25 years later sequel. And they were like, right, oh, yeah, you know what we need is Tommy Wiseau in here. That'll get things going, you know? But no, I will come in April. At least do 4 months because I need to see this movie.
And then our blockbuster John Carpenter Film Fest continues with Christine.
And I'm bringing my niece. My brother will be up for that one. We're bringing my niece. She's very excited. It was funny. She wanted to see The Thing, The Fog, and They Live. And we're like, well, we're taking to Christine. that's just, not to be jerks, but that's just how the timeline ended up because like my sister was like, you know, she can't. Weeknights are tough, you know, because she's, I don't know, 15 or whatever. So it's like weeknights are tough and all this stuff. So yeah, anyways, so we are coming to Christine. She's excited because her uncles will be there with her. So, you know, good film. Not saying it's a bad film, but it's just like, when you're like, The Thing, The Fog, you know, you're just like, and then we're like, Christine is, I mean, it's a horror movie.
It's a problem. John Carpenter made too many good movies.
I know, I know. And this one, to be honest with you, I didn't see Christine until 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because I just didn't get to it. I don't know. Like, it's a possessed car movie. I didn't know if I cared. But it's set in the 50s, right? Like,
Set in the 50s. It's a total last minute hired gun kind of movie.
Yeah.
Because the book, I only found this out recently. The book came out in April and the movie came out in December.
Come on. So he never read the book, I'm assuming.
So they must have, you know, Stephen King was coming off of, what was before Christine? Carrie and, you know, so he was becoming Stephen King.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they probably bought it before it was published. And then to have that turnaround, that's not a lot of time to make a movie.
Well, and he didn't write it, obviously, too.
No, I think like, somebody else did it, yeah.
I don't think, there was no Carpenter, no King, just some guy wrote it. No offense to whoever it was that wrote it.
But it was big. It was a big movie.
Put it as one of, like, maybe the top 10 Stephen King adaptations.
Okay.
Maybe in there. I'm just trying to think.
Saying a lot, but not saying a lot. Yeah,
might be the pinnacle. Well,
Shawshank, like, you know.
Shawshank, yeah. That's probably the pinnacle of movies that have been adapted by his books, I would say.
Like, it seems silly now, but it is this weird story. It's like a killer car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And there's parts where, I think the movie's funny, where it's like the car shows up and it is movie magic, right? Because it's the music and everything. And if it would have the Benny Hill soundtrack playing over it, it wouldn't have been as scary. But it's just a car. It doesn't even have teeth that come out or anything. Nope. Like,
nice car, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally this week, I forgot this is an Ottawa premiere too. We have this new film that's making the festival rounds called Riddle of Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Right up my alley.
Cool poster.
This is a Goonies-esque movie.
Oh.
Three mischievous children embark on a woodland odyssey when their mother sends them on an errand.
Okay. Oh, I have seen the trailer for this.
Yeah, it's like three cool-looking 80s kids on dirt bikes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All the reviews that I found were like, hallmark of an 80s classic children adventure, total crowd pleaser, feels at home right alongside Goonies. So I love Goonies
kind of
movies.
It's all that stuff that you just said.
I love Goonies kind of movies. So I think it's like a present day 80s set kids adventure.
Okay, that's cool.
I hope it's filled with swearing. I like it when 80s kids movies just have
endless
so
swearing.
Much swearing.
At least some. Yeah, like it did a pretty good job with that It Chapter One, you know, where it felt like real kids. And like kind of unrelated, but I liked Super 8 as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Don't even get me started on Super 8 because that to me is one of my favorite movies as told from a kid perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
it,
see
it really is. That movie is so brilliant on so many levels. And just the way it was told, like just like that scene of them on the hill singing My Sharona. Or it's just.
Well, and the kids. That's key. I've seen a couple movies where the kids were good, but a kid movie, you gotta audition 80,000 kids to find those kids.
Oh, yeah.
But Super 8 made me laugh because I'm like, is Spielberg allowed to produce a tribute to himself? Because this is just a movie about how cool Amblin is, and he's the producer on it, with JJ going, you're great, Steven.
Yeah, it's hard not to like co-sign the co-sign of yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
I love that film.
Finally this week, I will mention, we have a rental of a short film called This Isn't the End, which is a locally produced short film raising awareness towards mental health and the struggles of teenagers. Oh. So, and I think it's youngins have directed it and produced it too.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
I love that kind of stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And when a teenager or someone in their early 20s comes to the Mayfair and rents the place and sees their stuff on the big screen, it's so humbling for me because it's like this dream come true to see their work up on the big screen.
Yeah, it was kind of like that with Nolan as well, like Lee's protege. And that's funny too, because I was telling my sister, my aforementioned niece, she's really big into like creature makeup and like making models and all this stuff. And I was like, I keep forgetting to mention this, but I told her about Nolan and I was like, I'm sure he's always working on stuff. And I'm trying to like get the two creatives together to have these kids making gross R-rated stuff. So
I love kids making movies.
Yeah, I keep meaning to like message him and just be like, this is totally random, but you always need free help on your movies.
Yeah,
right? You know, so like, I don't know. That would be so cool if that ends up being a thing and I can pretend that I'm like the guy who hooked up.
Is he working on another one? He must be.
Isn't he always? Like, I don't know. And that kid, he's like 13 and he had his full-length horror movie shown here, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, that must have just, I don't know how you ever get over that. That must be the best feeling in the world.
And it was like super zombie serial killer, brutal.
Gross, yeah.
And his dad's like in the movie. And I just imagine his mom watching the rough cut and being like, well, he's either going to be really talented or this is going to go horribly wrong.
And he's so nice, too. Like, that's the thing. I was like, he's not, you see a kid making like the grossest stuff you've ever seen and you're like, oh, no. But like, he's such a nice, humble kid, you know. And so he's seen much, much gorier stuff than probably my sister wants my niece to see yet. But, you know, you got to start somewhere.
So that's it. That's the movies of Friday, March 22nd. It's been a crazy day here. And I'm glad this went well. Twofold. One, my laptop's on its last legs, and so I'm just, like, not making any sudden movements towards it.
Yeah.
It's kind of okay when it's on, but it just takes forever to turn on, and sometimes it just turns off. So this whole half hour, I was like, come on, baby.
Save this to the cloud somehow. I don't know if that's a thing.
And then as we speak, we have a dog film fest. I think maybe upwards of 20 dogs are in the cinema. So very irresponsible of me to be in here doing this in case something went wrong, but they're all good. They're fine. No.
Their bark is worse than their bite. Don't worry.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap things up. Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find information at mayfairtheater.ca for all the upcoming movies and on all the social media stuff. And thanks for joining us, Brad.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Birthday.
Do we get cake now?
No, but we're going to the comic store and you have to stay here alone.
Boo-hoo.
So just to let you know, you don't like comics, right? Oh,
no,
wait.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Okay, bye everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, and I noticed one of your employees is going to be watching Adaptation for the first time tonight. And I was like, oh my God, I remember what that felt like.
We did it. It didn't explode.
Huzzah. Save it. Save it.
She is seductive. She is passionate. She is possessive. She is pure evil. She is Christine, a 1958 Plymouth Fury, possessed by hell. Her previous owner is not alive to warn her present one. Once she lures you behind the wheel, you will be hers, body and soul. There is no place you can hide, no place you can run, and nothing you can do can stop her. Because how do you kill something that can't possibly be alive? Christine, body by Plymouth, soul by Satan.